Oh, I am a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. And for this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Yankee nation and everything they do. I hate the Declaration of Independence too. I hate the glorious Union, 'tis dripping with our blood. I hate the striped banner, I fit it all I could. I rode with Robert E. Lee for 3 years thereabout. Got wounded in 4 places and I starved at Point Lookout. I caught the rheumatism, a camping in the snow. But I killed a chance of Yankees and I'd like to kill some more. 300,000 Yankees is stiff in southern dust. We got 300,000 before they conquered us. They died of southern fever and southern steel and shot. I wish they were 3 million instead of what we got. I can't take up my musket and fight them now no more. But I ain't gonna love them, now that is certain sure. And I don't want no pardon for what I was and am. I won't be reconstructed and I do not give a damn. Oh, I am a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done.
Hello, friends and countrymen, Confederate patriots all. We're back with another episode of Confederate Radio. This is your host, Lieutenant Colonel Bryce, CSA2. And I wanted to get into some stuff today about heroes, savior complexes, and kind of move away. Like, I don't mean move away from, but all the paintings we see, the books we read, a lot of them, it's all defending General Forrest, which is for good cause. Because he is one of the personages that is most assaulted by the press, by the propaganda machine. And it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you sit on, what news station you watch, it's all the same propaganda that they put out, for this federal tyrannical government, that they put out since 1861, 62, 63, 64, 65. The assault on our Southern heroes has never let up. It is continuously going. The propaganda machine was built a long time ago. And for some reason, we seem to think that this is a new thing, that they just started printing lies about people, that this whole fake news thing is new. And it ties into the savior complex that I'm talking about. This savior complex. Like the conservative movement, the Republican Party, their identity used to be wrapped up in the Constitution. It used to be wrapped up in policies. Now you see a cult of personality, whether it's Reagan, Trump, or the Bushes. There is no more identity outside of the person who is at the head of the party at the moment. It's a savior complex, and it's scary. Because as a conservative, as a constitutionalist, as somebody who identifies as not a leftist, not a socialist, not a communist, you should be grounded in the Constitution. You should not be grounded in another man's personality. You have your own personality. You have your own thoughts. You have your own ideas, and you have your own interpretation of the Constitution. You do not need to listen to a New York Yankee or a Massachusetts Yankee, for that matter. If you are a Democrat, there used to be things like Blue Dog Democrats. There used to be conservative Democrats, but they've all been driven out of the party. Your identity used to be wrapped up in your state. Just like our ancestors, their identity was very much wrapped up in their state, their sovereign nation state. As we talked about in previous episodes, the nation states are what the states are, bound together by a contract. The Constitution is a contract. Our southern ancestors knew this. And when they left the Union, their goal was to preserve that Constitution. And I don't want to take issue with any of our Confederate heroes. See, we used to have heroes, not saviors. Everybody now sees a New York Yankee as their savior, as their identity. Their identity is this man. Their identity is not the Constitution. Their identity is not in and of themselves. Their identity is with one person. Their identity is anti-this, not anti-policies. Their identity is anti-another person. It is not pro-Constitution. It is not pro-rule of law. Their identity has become waving the Confederate flag right next to the flag that our forefathers fought against. Now, I'm not saying I'm an anti-American. I'm just saying our identity is very much confused. It's no longer strict. It's no longer ideals, concepts. That's what informs a man. That's what, you know, makes you think harder about things, brings new ideas to the forefront, is when you study something. But it has become so easy to say, I'm pro-Trump, I'm anti-Biden, I am anti-Democrats, I am pro-Republican. That is the easy way out, my friends. That is the easy way out. That is not the thinking man's way out. Because once you become so wrapped up with these people, you no longer will think for yourself. You no longer will question anything. You submit. And we are bringing ourselves into servitude. Not involuntary servitude, but we are willingly making ourselves servants of a party, servants of a man. And we are dividing ourselves, we are dividing our states, we are dividing our country. Now, I'm always going to be pro-Southern independence. That's just me. And there are arguments against it, which they make sense. They very much make sense. Like, the balkanization of the United States will be detrimental to the world, and it will. But we have reached certain points in our history where in this generation, something needs done. I don't know what that something is. I am not a savior. I am not a preacher. I am not to set myself up above people. I'm just trying to get ideas out there. I'm just trying to get people to think for themselves. At one point, the conservative movement was about the Constitution. At one point, it was about the Declaration of Independence. At one point, it was remembering our forefathers who fought in the First American Revolution and then the Second American Revolution in 1861. It was about their ideas, their concepts of government. You see it all the way to the earliest days of the Constitutional Convention, the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers. There is always ideas, and ideas will always clash, and they will be evolving. But what stays the same and what stays constant is our Constitution. I'd also like to bring note to people that our Confederate government never surrendered. Never once did it. Our armies in the field surrendered. None of our Confederate politicians were tried for treason. None of our Southern heroes were tried for treason. And I want to say again, look for heroes. Don't look for saviors. Look for men to emulate. Not men that you have to excuse some of their behaviors that you don't agree with. Not men who are from a section of society where every evil in this nation has come from. Because everything bad that we see in this nation has come out of New England. And that area. Everything good can be said to have come from the southern states. But every depredation, every evil, every vile theory or political ideal has come out of there. From communism, Satanism, Mormonism, anti-Americanism will always find its home in the Northeast. I don't know what reason this is. Well, I kind of do. Like we went over in the last episode, how there is two fundamentally different peoples in this nation, that settled in this nation. You had your Cavaliers from the English Civil War, Cavaliers and Roundheads, and that settled in the South. And then you have your Puritans who settled in the Northeast, that everything must be done their way or you are evil. And that has permeated their society ever since the settlement of that section of society. But what we must do as a people is wrap up our identity in the Constitution, in the Southern Constitution, if you so choose, which is just another image. It's like looking in a mirror. If the Constitution looked in a mirror, it would see itself in the Southern Constitution. And we must have heroes, not just one or two heroes, but our heroes must be those generals who were predominantly anti-secession. But when their states left, they refused to raise their swords, their muskets, their pistols against the people of their state. Now tell me, with the age of federalism, overreaching government, would you do the same? Ask the National Guard members who went to the Capitol during the January 6th fracas. Now, would they stand with their state? Or would they stand against the people of their state? I'm not bashing the military by no means. I'm just posing a question. And the question is, who are we? What is our identity? It's Southern, yes. Is it Confederate? Or is it just Southern? Is it a Tennessean, Mississippian, Georgian, South Carolinian? Or is it a subject of the federal government? Are we subjects or are we men? Are we men of our state? Or are we men who belong to the alphabet agencies like the ATF, the FBI, and the DEA? Because if we are not men of our state, if we are not men of our country, if we are not men of our history, we are no more than agents of the federal government. And that is what we have been programmed to be since elementary school. We have been programmed. We have been taught, we have been led to obey every mandate that comes down from the power set above us. And it begins in school. That's why I am a proud endorser of homeschooling. Do not send your children to the public schools where they're just to be indoctrinated to be good servants to the government. Homeschool your children. Start up homeschool collectives if it's legal. I was talking to my brother yesterday and he called me up from Brazil. He lives down there and has a company, but he was telling me that in Brazil, it's illegal to homeschool your kids. You will literally go to jail for that. He finds it ridiculous, the argument that happened there a few years ago, whether it was okay to homeschool. How do you feel about homeschooling? And people would be like, well, I don't think homeschooling's the best, so we should outlaw it. And that's literally what happened. That is where our government could go at any moment. They are centralizing power just as they did before 1861. They are centralizing all power to Washington, D.C. And I don't know how people don't see it, because ever since the invasion of the southern states, year by year, the government has told you, for your benefit, we are going to enact laws. For your benefit, we are going to centralize power. For your benefit, we are going to take power away from the sovereign nation states that make up this country and then give them to the federal government. Now we're coming into a day and age where a disease with a 99% survival rate will lock down the whole country. We are coming into a day and age where one side can do a mass shooting and then tell the other side that they need to give up their guns. You don't see conservatives going and shooting up these places. You don't see mass shootings from conservatives or constitutionally minded individuals. You see them from Democrat, socialists, communists, all the people with the blue and green hair, all the avowed card-carrying socialists who are dealing with a mental illness, and that it is being promoted by one side, and then they go and shoot up somewhere and they tell you, we've got to take guns from the law-abiding citizens of this country. I don't know in what world that makes sense. And then you have, you know, constitutional-minded individuals supporting a man who went after bump stocks, who supported gun control. They're like, well, he did all this other good stuff. And yeah, you know, the guy might have done some good stuff for this country, but still, you don't need to hero worship him. He is not your party. That man is not your constitution. The constitution is the constitution. And if you want to change things or wrap your identity up in something, wrap it up in the constitution. Study it. Understand it. Read books by the men who founded this nation. Read the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. You know, read books by men like Jubal Early. He wrote his memoirs after the war between the states. This man, in, what was it, 1864 or 65, the Valley Campaign, I believe it was in 1864, he led a feint at Washington, D.C., fought a battle up there. Yeah, a key Confederate defender of the Shenandoah Valley during the Valley Campaign of 1864. Early made daring raids to the outskirts of Washington, D.C. and as far as York, Pennsylvania. So, we must find our heroes and carefully vet them. I don't believe, it's my personal opinion, but I don't believe that our identity should be wrapped up in one man. Whether it's a Reagan, whether it's a Bush, whether it's a Trump. Our identity should be wrapped up in our thoughts on the Constitution. Our heroes should be men who risked everything. Life, limb, riches, family, children. To fight for what they believed in. And their belief was in the Constitution. Their belief was in the sovereignty of a state. And you'll get argued with all the time that they were fighting for a state's rights to keep slavery. You know, and maybe some men were doing this. Jefferson Davis's vice president very clearly stated that was his motivation for leaving the Union. Was the supremacy of one race over another. But many weren't. Consider A.P. Hill. He was one of the generals who was dead set against slavery and secession. Just like Jubal Early was a Unionist. But when his state left, when Lincoln called for 75,000 volunteers to invade and subjugate the southern states, these men had to look to honor and principle within themselves and decide whether they would fight for a federal government in Washington, D.C., or whether they would defend their families and neighbors, even though they did not agree with the decision made. And they did. They picked up arms and defended their state, their neighbors, their family members, and they waged a defensive war against an invading northern army. An army made up of millions of men to invade the South from all the northern states, especially from that hotbed of witchcraft and every sort of ism that you can imagine, New England. They were the ones who were banging the drum. They were the ones who'd been rattling their saber for 10 years that they were going to leave. It would have been okay if they left. The southern states wouldn't have invaded the north to keep them in a union that these people didn't agree with. So they let them rattle their sabers, and it was the south who left first. And they left out of a love for Constitution, an understanding of the Constitution, and the ideals of our founding fathers. And then they defended themselves. And out of that war, there became men that we could look to. Heroes. Southern heroes. That we could emulate and idolize. Not men that we could tie our whole identity in, but men that we could idolize. Men that we could see their achievements, admire their dash, their chivalry, the way that they waged war. They're men to admire. I especially admire Jubal Early, because even after the war, he was unreconstructed. The man left the country instead of live under a government that he did not agree with, and he became a firm supporter of, what was it, the Southern... Let me see here. I'm forgetting, but it's like the Southern Historical Society is what I believe it was, which was a society that defended the South's right to secede, defended their decision to secede. He wrote many letters, especially when General Longstreet came out with his criticisms of General Lee and others. He wrote refuting that. He wrote about his time in the war. He wrote over and over again defending the right of the southern states to secede. And I implore everybody who listens to this to look to his books, look to his writings. Because we are not going to understand. You are not going to understand. I would not understand what was going through the minds of these men unless we read what they wrote. You can't look to a historian like Shelby Foote or someone else to know exactly what these men thought, what they think. You have to read it from their own words. That's why I like my sources to be from the invasion of the southern states. I'm going to read books by Joshua Chamberlain, Ulysses S. Grant. I'm going to read books by President Jefferson Davis. I'm going to read books by Fitzhugh Lee. I'm going to read books by Jubal Early, Captain Jeremiah Ashe, Robert Calvert Cave. Like, all of these men, or Catlett Cave, not Calvert, my bad. But all these men wrote accounts of what they went through during that war, what their motivations were, what the motivations of their comrades in arms were. And I'm going to believe that before I believe a Yankee propaganda machine. I'm going to believe that before I believe a television show that was made 150 years after the war between the states. I'm going to believe their words. I want to know what these men were thinking, what they felt, what rose up in their breast and made them grab sword and musket to defend their homeland. Never have I once seen in any of the writings that I've read that any of these men had the idea of waging a war of conquest against their northern neighbors. In most of their writings, you see that they want to be left alone. Like Jubal Early, his post-bellum career, as they put it. So, it says, when the Army of Northern Virginia surrendered on April 9, 1865, Early escaped to Texas on horseback, hoping to find a Confederate force that had not surrendered. He proceeded to Mexico, and from there sailed to Cuba and finally reached the province of Canada. Despite his former Unionist stance, Early declared himself unable to live under the same government as the Yankee. While living in Toronto with some financial support from his father and elder brother, Early wrote a memoir of the last year of the war for independence in the Confederate States of America, 1866, which focused on his Valley campaign. The book became the first book published by a major general about the war. Early spent the rest of his life defending his actions during the war and became among the most vocal in justifying the Confederate cause, fostering what became known as the Lost Cause movement. We talked about that in the last episode when I read you the first page of the book, The Lost Cause, a book about Southern history. This book was to be an unbiased account of the war between the states. And the Yankee propaganda machine has now used the title of that book to discredit it, to call people either white supremacists or anybody who speaks highly of the Confederacy, defends the cause, lost causers. Which it was a stroke of genius by the propaganda machine to be able to take an amazing, amazing historical work from the time period and then turn it into a name of derision for the other side. Stroke of brilliance, but that doesn't make it true, what they're saying. And we should embrace that name. And when people call you a lost cause, they'd be like, yes, it's a great history book. Have you read it? Most of the time they'll tell you no. Tell them to read it. Read that first page. Keep that first page in your pocket and read it to them. That would be a good thing for all of us to do. Print off that first page and then just keep it with us. If you're called a lost cause, or read it to them. Be like, so, you're attacking a book that set out to put down an unbiased account of the war between the states. I bet you it'll knock their socks off. President Andrew Johnson pardoned Early and many other prominent Confederates in 1869, but Early took pride in remaining an unreconstructed rebel and thereafter wore suits of Confederate gray cloth. He returned to Lynchburg, Virginia, and resumed his legal practice about a year before the 1870 death of General Robert E. Lee. In an 1872 speech on the anniversary of General Lee's death, Early claimed inspiration from two letters Lee had sent him in 1865. In Lee's published farewell order to the Army of Northern Virginia, the general had noted the overwhelming resources and numbers that the Confederate Army had fought against. In one letter to Early, Lee requested information about enemy strengths from May 1864 to April 1865, the war's last year, in which his army fought against Lieutenant General Ulysses S. Grant, the Overland Campaign, and the Siege of Petersburg. Lee wrote, "My only object is to transmit, if possible, the truth to posterity and do justice to our brave soldiers." Lee also wrote, "I have not thought proper to notice or even to correct misrepresentations of my words and acts. We shall have to be patient and suffer for a while at least. The present public mind is not prepared to receive the truth." Hmm. Despite Lee's avowed desire for reconciliation with his former West Point colleagues who remained with the Union, and with Northerners more generally, Early became an outspoken and vehement critic of Lieutenant General James Longstreet, and after the war, worked with Republicans and African Americans. Early also often criticized the former Union general, later President Ulysses Grant, as a butcher. Which I find no fault with Jubal Early's attack on James Longstreet and others. Because James Longstreet, after the war, the criticism of James Longstreet and the defense of the cause for which he fought, it's only logical that this would happen. It's only logical that a man who had spent 4 years of his life fighting for the independence of his nation would then defend his commanding general, who was being attacked by Longstreet at the time, who'd went over to work with the Republicans and under Ulysses S. Grant. I understand the two men were friends, and what Longstreet did during the war was monumental. You can't take that from him. But after the war, he turned his coat fairly quickly. And with Lee refusing to defend himself and his actions during the war, finding it beneath him to do so, or dishonorable, I'm not sure which, but sometimes when you get in an argument with somebody, especially if you do it online. Now, back then, writing letters to the newspapers was the online of the day. It was their Facebook posting. It was their tweets. But you see that people do get into these arguments, and it seems silly, almost childish. I get drawn into it sometimes, too. And Lee felt that that was beneath him to get in these public spats with the men that he used to command. But old Jubal Early, as Lee called him, his bad old man because of his mouth and his grumpy temperament, did not find such fault. He was on the same level. They were, I believe, the same rank, Early and Longstreet, or maybe Early was underneath Longstreet's command. I'd have to look into it. But he was either punching from the bottom or he was punching at the same level as Longstreet. And he took to defend General Lee and took to defend the cause for which they had fought for so long, that so many soldiers had died. And it would seem he was fulfilling his former commander's last wishes, his last command to his general in that letter, defending the reputation of the soldiers that they had led. That's one of the most honorable things that can be done by an officer, defending the honor of the men that they had led. Because at this time, they were under constant attack, just like they had been during the war. In the press, you had a press and a government and a nation drunk with victory. They could heap any abuses they want upon the vanquished. Just ask yourself, if you were thrust into that position, what would you do? Would you keep quiet, or would you defend your commanding general? Would you keep quiet and let the Yankees continue to abuse you, abuse your people, abuse the soldiers, and abuse the cause for which you had fought? Or would you stand up and do what you could, write to the newspapers, speak to the media, put out books? And if you find yourself in this category, that you think you would, after the war, you would defend your cause, you would defend your general, you would defend your soldiers, then why aren't you doing it now? And if you are, I salute you. But do it now. Self-publish books. Sell them at local stores. Write about things that you know. That's what I do. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a great person. I'm not saying I am the example at all, even a little bit. I'm just saying I'm tired. I got tired. I am tired. I am tired of talking about it. I look to my heroes and then I try and emulate their example. And I believe that that's what all of us should do. We should all look to our heroes. The Jubal Earlys, the A.P. Hills, the John Hunts Morgans, William Clark Quantrells, General Lees, General Jacksons, the Champ Fergusons, the Bloody Bill Andersons, the Jesse Jameses. We should look to our Southern heroes and learn from their example. We should learn from our history. We should learn from the Bible. We should honor our mother and fathers, our grandmothers and grandfathers, our great-great-grandmothers and grandfathers. The sacrifices that they made to try and give us a government as close and as pure to the original Declaration of Independence as possible. That's what we should do. We should quit getting caught up in cults of personalities and savior complexes. We should look to our heroes. What did they do? They read, they studied, they knew the Constitution. They spoke with the founding fathers. Shoot, Lee's wife was the granddaughter of General George Washington, the first president of the United States. Do you not think that he learned something from this family? His father was Harry Lighthorse Lee, General George Washington's cavalry commander during the War of Independence. Do you not think that he got the ideas pure and unadulterated from the source, what this nation was founded upon? He was a Union man, not a secessionist. He was a career army officer. And he went where honor and duty dictated. I have a great chapter about him in my book, In Their Words, Quotes of the Men in Gray, that compiles quite a few of General Lee's quotes. And if you read them, you will be struck by the quality of this man, the moral character, the principles that guided him from his own words. And that's what we must do as Southern patriots, as defenders of the good name of our ancestors. We must know what they fought for and what they fought against. I believe that we should look to them as heroes and emulate their ideals and their examples. We should not have our identity completely caught up in another man, in one man. I think that's very much so the plan of whoever is planning these things. They give a savior to each side. Your identity becomes wrapped up in the savior and not the Constitution, because the Constitution promotes freedom. The Declaration of Independence promotes freedom. That's why it's not taught in schools. It's not taught in schools because if they teach it, you will think for yourself. You won't continue to be spoon-fed servitude by these teachers. You will not be controlled by the liberal teachers' union. So I exhort you, friends, countrymen, Confederates, patriots all, teach your children, become teachers, take back the teachers' union. Because that's where it starts, is with the youth. If the youth is continuously brainwashed by the other side, the opposing side, they will not be yours. They're not your children. They are trained up by people who believe in things that you don't believe in. The ideas that are filtered down to them are ideals that you stand against staunchly, shoulder to shoulder with your brothers, or so you think. I say so you think you stand shoulder to shoulder with them, because on some levels you do. But if you're letting your identity be wrapped up in the cult of personality, then you are not standing for the Constitution. You are not standing for the Declaration of Independence. You are not standing for the Southern patriots who fought in this war, and that's what you must do. You must not let your identity become wrapped up in these people. You must be firmly rooted in first the Constitution, second the Declaration of Independence, and third, our Southern heroes and ancestors. And lastly, in the Confederacy. Because if we are to be, to call ourselves Confederates, Confederate patriots, then we must know. We can't be uneducated, because we are going to be attacked by the intelligentsia of the day. We must have our arguments ready. We must be able to intelligently defend our Southern ancestors' actions. We must be able to defend those heroes. And personally, I think we should have more than one or two Southern heroes. Like, I get it. You know, Forrest and General Lee gave a lot to the Confederacy. They gave a lot. And they are some of the most, I don't even know how to say it. They're some men who really deserve to be emulated. Like, above many of this day and age. But by far, they are not the only ones. Read the writings of Claiborne. Read the writings of Jubal Early. Read the writings of Captain Jeremiah Ashe. Read the writings of Robert Catlett Cave. You know, read The Lost Cause. Read. Before you go to bed, read a chapter. Read Jefferson Davis's book, The Rise and Fall of the Confederate Government. Once you do this, you can all argue intelligently. I find it so disheartening when I see people standing up, but then are just torn apart. Don't know what to say. It's happened to me. I found it very disheartening when the news media came at me. And I couldn't, when I was younger, I couldn't defend intelligently the cause for which my ancestors fought. And it brought me down, you know, after that meeting. I felt really low, because I knew in my heart what these men fought for. I just did not have the words to say. And I couldn't intelligently defend the people that I wanted to. So I read and I read and I read. I did my studies. I read their firsthand accounts. And once you ingest enough of this, then you'll be able to regurgitate it. You know, when you were questioned, when you were attacked. So what I'm saying is, take back the teachers' union. Don't let yourself get wrapped up in a cult of personality or a savior complex. Root yourself in the Constitution. Root yourself in our Southern ancestors. Learn what they fought for. Not just the battles and the names. Learn the ideals that they fought for. Learn the principles. Learn the character of these men. Then try and emulate that. Don't give your whole personality over to a Trump 2024 flag. I'm not telling you how to vote. I'm not saying don't do this, that, or the other. I'm just telling you from what I have seen. And I travel this country back and forth, you know, 8-9 times a year. And I do it in car. I stop in states. I have friends throughout the states. I have brothers throughout the states. There's CSA 2 regiments, you know. There's SCV camps. There's SIA branches in all these states. I have friends I go see in numerous states, and I've seen it all across the country. A lot of people, they're like, oh, you just sitting in a basement somewhere podcasting, doing this, that, and the other. And it's like, no, I'm out there. I'm out there with my flag. I'm out there speaking to people. You know, I'm setting up booths at gun shows. That's another good thing that we can do to promote our ancestors. You know, get some books written by our ancestors. Get some Confederate flags. Go to a gun show. Hand out flyers. Let people know that we're still here. That our ancestors are not villains to be vilified. Learn more about our Confederate ancestors. Learn about the Champ Fergusons of the war. One of the only men who was hung after the war, who was a commissioned officer by John Hunt Morgan, as a captain in Confederate Partisan Rangers. Learn about the Partisan Rangers. Learn about the guerrilla warfare. Learn about Andersonville, because they will throw that in your face over and over. Andersonville, Quantrell, the Lawrence Raid, the Fort Pillow Massacre. They will throw these in your face over and over. And speaking on Andersonville, let me say this. At that time, the southern states were blockaded. Things weren't coming into the ports. You know, people had to make do with a lot of things that they wouldn't have before. They were not getting in the creature comforts that they had before. That's like my book, Survival Recipes from the Beleaguered South. It compiles all the recipes from newspapers of what people were using for substitutes. That these people had to make do without these things. There was no creature comforts. There was not massive amounts of food coming in. There was not spices, sugars, this, that, or the other. Everybody was on half rations and quarter rations. There was a huge rationing. And at Andersonville, the squalor, the food and commissary issues can all be laid at the feet of Abraham Lincoln and his cabinet and government. Because the commandant of Andersonville wanted to send these Yankee soldiers back, but the United States government would not take them. They said to exchange prisoners would be to recognize the South as a country, and they did not want to do that. Their whole premise for the war is that you cannot secede. You cannot constitutionally leave the contract that you signed yourself into. But Lincoln was a lawyer, so I don't understand where he gets this idea from, that a contract between states, once one party breaches the contract, cannot then be nullified. That makes no sense whatsoever. You know, I got my paralegal degree. That's not how contracts work. When a contract is breached, you know, there's usually reparations for the breach, and then it becomes null and void. So he does not want to recognize these Confederate prisoners as combatants in a war of independence. He does not want to exchange prisoners, because then he would be recognizing that government. He does not want to give more manpower back to the South. And in so doing, he left all these men in a prison where the guards were on the same rations as the men. The commandant was on the same rations as the men. He was a captain. It wasn't like he was a general. And he'd written to the North, you know, requesting help. Take these prisoners off his hands. He can't feed them. And what does the North do? They refuse. There ends up being squalor in the camp. People are hardly eating their skin and bones. But this could have been avoided with the prisoner exchange. This could have been avoided if the North would have sent some food to them. It could have been avoided if the blockade had been loosened just enough for one port to be open for grain shipments to be sent in to Andersonville. But none of this was done. There was many ways that that could have been changed. But the Yankee government refused to, then hung the commandant after the war. Just like they hung Champ Ferguson after the war. He was a guerrilla. He was a partisan ranger in East Tennessee, fighting against other guerrillas, like Tinker Dave. We've talked about the guerrilla warfare before. It was brutal. It was neighbor against neighbor. It was against sympathizers in an area, whether they were pro-secesh or whether they were pro-union. It didn't matter. You know, one side or the other was going to come after you. It's guerrilla warfare. You know, they're trying to stamp out that sentiment in a given area so that the armies that came through would not then get aid. You have men like John Hunts Morgan, a commissioned general in the Confederate States Army, He was in the cavalry commander, led some great raids into Ohio that kept thousands of Yankee soldiers from the front. You know, he was a daring and dashing man. William Clark Quantrell, another guerrilla leader. You know, read about these men. There's biographies on all of them. You can find them anywhere. You just got to sift through some of the bullshit that the propaganda machine puts in these books. Unless you write one yourself. Write one on the subjects that you speak about. Start a podcast. Start a radio show. You know, we have to take the narrative back. Because they have taken it from us and held us at gunpoint for the last 150 years. And when you speak highly of your Confederate ancestors, your Southern ancestors, they go bang. And you're hit with that racist. You're a racist. You're a lost causer. You're a racist lost causer. And if you don't know how to respond to that, then you can't defend the good name of your ancestors. If you're not out there holding events, if you're not, get on a sidewalk, man. Remember the Tea Party? They were on every corner when they started. They were out there with flags and signs. We need to be doing the same thing. I'd say conservatives are inherently lazy. Well, maybe not lazy. I'd say they're too polite. We are too polite. We don't get out there with our flags. We don't march. We don't do this, that, or the other. And in not doing this, and not holding events, and not supporting our Southern ancestors, and not putting flags on their graves, and not being out there with the battle flag, waving it for everyone to see, we condemn their memory by our silence. We condemn them to the pages of history that are written by the propaganda machine. It is our duty. It is our job. It is our honor to defend these men's name. And that's what we all must remember. Don't get your identity so wrapped up in a Yankee savior from New York. Remember that to be a conservative is to be a constitutionalist. To be a conservative is to believe in small government, in states' rights, in honoring your mother and father, in honoring your ancestors, and putting up monuments to them. Being a conservative is to know the Declaration of Independence just as much as you know the Constitution. Being a conservative is not being anti-something, it's being pro-something. And that's what we are, being a constitutionalist. And all sides must remember that. You know, you are a citizen of your state. Your state is paramount. And that's where everything begins. Politics begins at the local level. If you can take back the local level, then you can go to the state level. And if you can take back the state level, then you might have a chance at changing this government before it balkanizes. Or you might have a chance at secession. If that is the way the people so choose. And remember, friends, Confederate government never surrendered, only our armies in the field. So technically, we are still a nation under occupation. I wish you all a good night. Hopefully, I've said some things that'll stick with you guys, some things that'll help you get out there and get active, and hopefully something that'll make you look into the Constitution, look into our Declaration of Independence, look into the Southern Constitution, read some books by the guys who were there, who fought it, who felt it, and who were swept up in the passions of that day. Once you do that, you'll be able to defend your ancestors intelligently against the constant attack. We've got to be able to defend our ancestors effectively, because as of up till now, it hasn't been really effective. And we as a people have to figure out how to change that. So, Lieutenant Colonel Bryce, CSA 2, signing off. Wishing you all a good night.
Just what I am, and for this Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I hate the Yankee nation and everything they do. I hate the Declaration of Independence too. I hate the glorious Union to dripping with our blood. I hate the striped banner, I fit it all I could. I rode with Robert E. Lee for 3 years thereabout. Got wounded in four places and I starved at Point Lookout. I caught the rheumatism, a camping in the snow. But I killed a chance of Yankees and I'd like to kill some more. 300,000 Yankees is stiff in southern dust. We got 300,000 before they conquered us. They died of southern fever and southern steel and shot. I wish they were 3 million instead of what we got. I can't take up my musket and fight them now no more. But I ain't gonna love them, now that is certain sure. And I don't want no pardon for what I was and am. I won't be reconstructed and I do not give a damn. Oh, I'm a good old rebel, now that's just what I am. For the Yankee nation, I do not give a damn. I'm glad I fought again, I only wish we'd won. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done. I ain't asked any pardon for anything I've done.